Hello, welcome to Back to the Frame Rates April wrap-up episode. This is something that we're going to try doing at the end of every month or the beginning of the month, where we wrap up last month's retrospective. Last month, we did the Christopher Nolan Nostalgia Month, where we watched four Nolan films, the early part of his career. And we're going to give out the Christopher Nolan Awards, and we're going to do some movie musings and just kind of see where we go with this. How is everybody doing today?
So good.
Great. Woo.
We both went into that like Scooby-Doo characters. Like, I'm fine.
At the very top of the show, I'd just like to ask each of you, just briefly, what did you guys think of our Christopher Nolan month?
Super interesting.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. Following was a like ring, 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 wake up call to my brain of low budget magic and like set stuff in motion. So for me, I was just like following happy that movie. I loved a lot of the other films of Following. I just was like, I'm so glad I've seen that, because had we not had it on our agenda, I don't know if I ever would have seen that movie, to be honest. So that was great.
I agree, Sam. It was the first time I had watched that. It's been on my watch list literally for decades, and I'd never gotten around to it. And it was just, I probably never would have if we didn't probably put it on our agenda. So I'm thankful we got to see that. And seeing all of these again in this, I hate to call it a critical light, but it was really wonderful watching these in this light to be able to talk about it this way. Cause I've never done that before. And I think I've garnered a huge appreciation, even more than I had before, for each of these films that we looked at.
My first watch for most of them. And I thought it was great. I learned that I'm a fan of Nolan's early work.
Yeah.
I like it.
Maybe
much
someday,
more than his later work.
Maybe someday I still want to revisit some of his later films, even though I'm not the biggest fan of some of his recent work. I did rewatch Oppenheimer a second time and I got a lot more out of it. But
I love Oppenheimer.
I did not like Tenet. I was not a big fan of Dunkirk, but I've also only seen them one time in a theater where I had no idea what I was hearing.
Interstellar comes out again in the cinema this year. It's coming back out. 10-year anniversary.
10-year anniversary. Actually, I love Interstellar. Interstellar is my last favorite. Is the last Nolan film that I loved.
I did not love Interstellar, so I'd like to give it another shot in the theater. I think after the Dark Knight stuff, it really kind of falls off for me. And it wasn't even those I have mixed feelings on.
Well, we have some awards to hand out. And we've done this in the past, I think with our Noirvember and maybe our Spielberg retrospective, but we're going to shake it up a little bit for this one. Instead of doing our standard like best actor, best supporting actress, best music, we have some superlatives we're going to do this month. And we're going to start off with some of our regular awards, best actor, best actress. But we have some other ones we're going to get to, and we're going to reveal them as we go. But let's begin with some standard awards. And stick with us, everyone. We're going to get to some good ones in a couple of minutes. But let's go down we'll start right here with best actor for the Nolan films. Now, let's just recap here for a moment. We watched Following, we watched Memento, we watched Insomnia, and we watched The Prestige. So these are the four movies that we watched in our retrospective. So all of the movies, all of the awards have to fall within these four movies here. So
for obvious reasons, The Prestige should win everything, because I'm Michael Caine and I was in that. The best movie ever, The Prestige.
So it is the best Nolan, maybe.
So when I'm saying best actor, any actor from any of these movies. It could be a supporting actor, it could be anything. Sure, we're just gonna keep it really simple. So I'll throw it at you, Sam.
I would have to go with Guy Pearce in Memento, just because of the journey that he goes on and the fact that he's playing a character with a real disease and that he does it so incredibly well and he's so believable. And he stands out. I love everyone else. They're great. There's a lot of good actors in the other films, but in this selection, I would go with him.
I have to tell you, having never seen Memento until like weeks ago, Guy Pearce was unrecognizable in that role. Like, I didn't know him and his career as that movie. So I was like, wow, this guy should be in more movies. He is. Yeah. He's in every movie ever made. It's Guy Pearce. It was great.
It wasn't quite as good as The Time Machine, but what is, right?
Just kidding. Really liked a hot tub.
You just watched The Time Machine again, didn't you, B?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that your pick too?
No. For me, it's Christian Bale in The Prestige. He's got so much to chew on in that movie.
I am also going with an actor from The Prestige, but I'm going with Hugh Jackman.
Oh!
He's got the like I said before, the showy performance.
He and does, yeah.
Christian Bale, I feel like, is doing Christian Bale.
I love that. Sign me up.
Nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I love what Hugh Jackman's doing. He's just batshit in that movie. So I love he's the greatest showman. You know, he's kind of doing that whole thing. I loved what he did in that.
I love your perspective.
Let's go to best actress in these films. Sam, kicking over to you.
I know this might seem like a surprise, but like I just really, really, really liked Hilary Swank in Insomnia. And I know it's like what you guys were saying, like in your opinion, not the deepest character. And I get that. But I just, her evolution in that movie, the arc that she experiences from going to completely being like head over heels with Al Pacino and his career and like sucking up to him to like the slow realization that something is wrong. I just really like the way she portrayed her character in that film. So I would have to go with Hilary Swank. Standout for me.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, it's Carrie Ann Moss in Memento. She's just doing so much with that role. Yeah, I think it's amazing.
She's scary. Yeah.
She's hot and cold. She's walking around. But yeah, I love it.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything you just said, she's incredible in that. And problem is, there weren't a lot of options in this category because Nolan.
Because Nolan. But at least Carrie Ann Moss, I think, is incredibly dynamic. I think she has a lot going forward. And Hilary Swank, I think it's kind of impossible to separate her from her illustrious career at this point. I mean, Million Dollar Baby is a big one for me. I love her.
Great. Okay. So we're going to go on to our first superlative award here, which I'm calling the Sidekick Award. And this is an award that you would be a character that you would want to go into battle with.
Mm.
I would have to say Al Pacino from Insomnia. The reason being is
because same.
If I screwed up and I was a good friend of his, he would like cover up evidence for me and stuff like that. You know, so I'd be like, okay, I like need, you know, this guy will help me out. So definitely Al Pacino. Yeah.
Yeah, Al Pacino all the way from me. Also because like he's off the rails, man. You know, if I'm going in a battle, I'm bringing this crazy guy.
He'd know how to fight like a dirty criminal. He'd like get into their headset.
He's scrappy. Look how old he is, running across logs and shit.
Exactly.
I like that, but I'd be worried about his agility or something. I don't know. So you're both going with Al Pacino. I actually went with Christian Bale as Borden. I feel like if there's anybody who is going to recklessly kick ass and take names later, and it's going to be somebody played by Christian Bale. And I'm hopefully he's slightly intoxicated too. So I would want him to, you know, to go and he'd do the fighting for me, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Don Cacino, it's a whole new game. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
Don't mind if I do.
We need to watch more Al Pacino movies.
Yeah.
Our next award, superlative, is for a wingman or wingwoman award. What character would you want to be your wing on a date?
David Bowie, Tesla.
Oh, don't ask me where I got these from, okay?
Tesla, all day. David Bowie,
your wingman?
Yeah, because if I flub, I still get to spend the night at a bar with David Bowie.
Like, that's true. You got a good backup there, yeah.
Yeah. I like this alternate reality where he's my backup.
Sam?
I might have to go with Christian Bale as my wingman because if he's like, there's like a good natured element to his soul, it would not be Robin Williams from Memento. From Insomnia. My God, what a terrible slip up. But wouldn't be Robin Williams just because I would be afraid that he'd murder my date if she upset him. So I wouldn't want that. Yeah. definitely Christian Bale.
Okay. My wingman would be Andy Serkis, Ali from The Prestige. I think he would he would keep the party going. I think he seems like a pretty outgoing guy. He'd introduce me to some cool people. So, he seems like a fun guy. He jumped right in there. Hey, meet my buddy Nathan. You know, I think he was
he'd be great. I can see it.
Yeah, I can see
it. And then if when he got too drunk, he'd be like, "Stupid fat hobbit."
I don't want to know the context for Ron wriggling here.
All right, this one's a little bit more serious. Well, not serious, but like I'm calling it the Scene Stealer Award. Mm. So basically, you know, what actor, character in any of these movies just like was the scene stealer for in the movie they were in?
So I would
Bale in The Prestige. Sorry, Sam, I totally stepped on you.
No, please. Yeah, no. I was going to say, I don't know about scene stealer or scene chewer, but it would definitely be Al Pacino in Insomnia when he's like, they put her body in garbage bags at the town dump. That was a scene stealer. That was like Al Pacino being like, for a moment, I thought I was in Heat again, but no, it's another picture. You know, that does stand out. I mean, there's a lot of strong performances, but scene stealer, I mean, he like chewed it up in that one. So that's why I would give him the award.
I love the scene of Christian Bale when he's arrested. Well, I guess the timeline of that movie, but where there's a scene where he's, you know, locked up and I don't know if it's the warden or the guard is sort of taunting him. And he's like, well, how did you get famous anyway? And Christian Bale tries to do a magic trick. And just that secondhand embarrassment that I can just feel. That scene just gets me every time. I think it's great.
I hear that.
All right. So I went with the actual performance as a scene stealer, and I went with Joey Pants as Teddy in Memento. And I just, the reason why is because I just love how whenever he's introduced into a scene, he literally pops into the scene. Like, and he just like, every time he just like jumps into like on top of the car or wherever he is. And he just infuses every one of his scenes with a lot of energy and a lot of sense of humor into the movie. So for me, he was the one of the reasons why that movie works, because he just brings a completely opposite energy into that movie. And I
think it's a great choice.
Yeah. So that's my pick for that. We have one more award here, and I'm calling it the Fallout Shelter Award. Now, the Fallout Shelter Award awarded to a character you would invite into our Fallout Shelter to help repopulate the Earth, just so that it would, you know, to.
Oh my God, this is so horny on Maine, Nathan.
Yeah. it's for mankind.
Oh my God. Can't it just be like a mate in the fall, like just someone we want to hang out with, just a buddy.
It could be. It's just somebody that we need good genes in the new world.
Stop. Gross. Oh my God. Just hang out with somebody. Somebody, I guess.
Yes, like we could do it. Finally. Look at that way. Yes, we can look at it that way. Yes.
I'm going PG. That's really what it is. So in that totally chill way, who did you all pick?
God, I don't know.
I mean, originally, I had Scarlett Johansson. Uh-huh. But that's just me. That'll get me canceled. So my backup would obviously be David Bowie as Nikola Tesla. Two reasons, twofold question. First, I would bring just to have David Bowie back from the dead. We need that, of course. But if the version of him is the character of Tesla, I'd settle for that. I do think he would be a very intense person to share a confined space with. Mm-hmm. However, I think he'd be an asset to our small community because he'd probably invent some cool shit that might be helpful.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why.
Yeah. I also went with Tesla. Very similar reasons. I was like, this is a good person to have around. Also, seems cool. And I would be lacking that in the bunker.
I would have to pick Hillary Swank because of her like police officer training and mental discipline, I feel like she would
crime.
Well, no, I feel like she would be good at like keeping people sane, like, you know, in the bunker. And she would be like, she would be good at making, just like making sure no one
pragmatic.
Cried. Yeah. She'd be pragmatic. So I'd have to go with Hillary Swank. Yeah.
I was looking at these movies. I've been kind of on a movie poster kick lately. Do any of you have like a favorite movie poster from any of these movies? I often think Nolan's posters kind of look repetitive, but
you know what the most disappointing poster is to Prestige. You would think that might be something better. I actually kind of dig Falling, the colors and the design for that.
Yeah,
it actually kind of looks good. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But I like the Memento poster. I think it's fine.
Memento's pretty cool. It is fine. That feels like something that everybody that was in college in the early 2000s probably had on the wall.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
All right. Nolan, man. Oh, wait. What was everyone's favorite Nolan?
Yeah. I mean, I'll rank them of these four.
Yeah,
that we
let's
watched,
do a ranking. Yeah,
I mean, it's Prestige slightly over Memento. They're both amazing, followed by and probably in following then Insomnia.
Fascinating. Sam, do you have a ranking?
You go first because I'm just making my ranking right now.
All right. Yeah, I put everyone on the spot. Sorry. For me, it's the Prestige, then Memento, Insomnia, then the Following.
So for me, it would be, and I would definitely go one would be number one would be Insomnia. Two would be the Prestige. Three would be the Following. And four would be Memento.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
That is interesting. Wow.
You really resonated with Insomnia. I'd be interested to see if you ever watched the original one.
I got to
totally
check it out.
Different vibe.
I have a weird feeling the original one would like be almost so dark that I maybe feel less connected, but I don't know until I see it.
I think you'll like the Al Pacino version better, but it'd be interesting to see. Yeah.
Don't mind if I do. Don't Pacino.
Jack and Jill premiering next week.
Okay. And one other piece of business with the Nolan retrospective, we did put a few of these movies into our vault. And I actually want to back up a little bit before that. A few vault admissions over the past couple months. We put in The Prestige and Memento were the two movies that did successfully get admitted into our vault.
Yay!
And before that, we did Epic Love Stories. Is that what our prior?
Epic Romances. Yeah.
Epic Romance. Oh my God. I totally forgot already. It was so long ago.
Cetus Lapidus.
Did you realize that of those four movies, three of them actually did get into our vault?
And it's the Ellie effect. Movies,
those three out of the four were The English Patient, Atonement, and The Notebook. So good. Of all those, I do this. One more time.
Woo. Love it.
Yeah. So our vault is getting thicker.
Oh, man.
All right. So coming up next week, we are beginning a brand new retrospective. We are starting the Mad Max franchise. We're going to watch all five. Well, the four Mad Max movies that have already been. Is it four? That's four.
We're going to watch Mad Max, Road Warrior, Beyond the Thunderdome, Fury Road, and Furiosa.
I cannot talk tonight.
And
random shout out to the 1990 film The Rescuers Down Under, starring Bob Newhart, where the rescuers fly with the eagle in Australia and the mouses and the creatures. It's a wonderful time. Give it a spin. There's some early good CGI animation in it.
Is there any particular movie in this franchise that you're most looking forward to? B.
Yeah, actually. So I love these movies unabashedly. I think they're great. But the one I've seen the least and that lives the loudest in my memory is Beyond the Thunderdome. So I'm excited to revisit that sort of with a current eye on it in context.
All right. Sam, is there any particular one of these in the franchise you're most looking forward to?
I mean, I love all of them, but spoiler alert, The Road Warrior is my favorite of the four films. So I definitely look forward to that. Yeah. But I've actually grown to like Thunderdome a lot. That'll be for a great discussion because that movie gets better and better for me.
Well, in my mind, I think of every Mad Max movie getting better and better as they go on. So I'm interested to see if that still rings true for me.
There might be a speed bump right in the middle there somewhere.
You'll really interesting.
No, I'm not saying anything because I haven't seen Thunderdome in a while, but it might be a little audacious.
Sure.
I'll save it for the Thunderdome discussion. I will simply hint at there are two specific things in Thunderdome that drive me nuts. If it wasn't for these two things, I would have liked the movie a lot more, but I still like it a lot, but I'll tell you guys later. So feel the suspense for several weeks. What did he mean by that? Find out soon.
I'm looking forward to all of these because I've never watched these with any critical eye ever in my life. This has just been like shoving like Skittles in my eyes, these movies. So I'm really excited to look at these in any critical sense at all. So I am curious how I will look at these. And I'm really excited because recently I got my Mad Max box set in. So I'll be watching all of these in glorious.
I think I might copy of there.
By HD and blue. And I got the Fury Road in 4K and the black and chrome one as well, which is, I don't know which, how I'm going to watch all these. And, you know, I might watch the 4K, then watch it in the black and chrome and then watch the commentary. I have to watch it so many times that week.
Yeah. Well, good thing for you, Fury Road. Fucks. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. So, tune in this upcoming Monday for our first episode where we'll be discussing 1979's Mad Max. Okay, we're going to shift gears and just do a little bit of wrap up of what we've been watching recently. I don't think this will take too long, but a couple things of films that we've seen recently. B, do you want to start off?
Sure. Watching? Yeah, I'm very close to being done with David Lean. I just have his final film left, so I'll let you all know. And I did have a violent week at the movie theater. Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, Monkey Man, Boy Kills World, Ultraviolence is back in a big way, and I'm here for it. I'm loving all of it. What a way to start off Mad Max anthology for us. It's been great. And then to sort of tuck in, to build some context for me, because Australian New Wave is something I'm sort of pretty shamefully unfamiliar with, I have been digging into Criterion's Australian New Wave collection, and that has been a real treat. So I've done a couple of Peter Weir. I've done The Cars That Ate Paris and Picnic at Hanging Rock. Of course, I watched Mad Max this week, which stay tuned for our thoughts on that. Gillian Anderson's My Brilliant Career. Gave that a whirl. And then I think the one to really watch, because I do struggle with Australian New Wave, I'm learning, but a standout for me was Walkabout, which I think is kind of one of the quintessential films, Nicholas Roeg. So give that a watch if you can.
All right. Cool. I'll mention one thing that I've watched. I am four episodes in on the Amazon Prime show Fallout. Again, kind of an interesting tie-in to the
apocalyptic.
Watching more apocalyptic.
Did you play the game?
Content. I did.
Me
I
too.
I played some of it. I played Fallout 4.
Yeah.
So I am having a lot of fun with this. I'm halfway through this. I'm four episodes in. Main cast is awesome. I love Walton Goggins so much. I love him going back to the days where he was on The Shield, one of my all-time favorite shows.
Yes.
Ella Purnell as Lucy McLean, I think, is great in this. What I'm really enjoying so far is that it's not really putting us in one of those, you know, really bad, like first person shooter type movie things where they're trying to do that. It's really working hard on world building. And I think it's getting the tone of it right.
Yeah.
I, th- The thing I've enjoyed about Fallout is that, yes, it's a post-apocalyptic storyline, but it takes place in this alternative future that kind of completely jumps over, you know, all cultural references of everything that happened after the 1950s. So it takes place in this uncanny valley of a world where that looks and feels almost like this dystopian Tomorrowland world type thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I love it. I can't wait to wrap up the last couple episodes. So I will, maybe next month I'll give my full review on Fallout, but I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sam, why don't you tell us about something you've been watching or what you've been doing? You've had a busy month.
Busy month. And there is one movie that I was definitely able to catch in the theater. And I'll get right to that. I have been on the road this month because what started as just visiting Russellville, Arkansas for the solar eclipse, of course, given the nature of my YouTube channel and show Walks of World, spiraled into something bigger because I drove all that distance to see the eclipse. Then I thought to myself, I'm way the hell out in the country now. I might as well bank episodes on the way back. So I took a very roundabout route, and coming out soon, I will have an episode on location filming for Close Encounters, Steven Spielberg's epic sci-fi film, most specifically Devil's Tower, and also an in-depth look at the town of Wallace, Idaho, where Dante's Peak was shot with Pierce Brosnan and Linda Hamilton, a very guilty pleasure action movie, disaster movie, I should say, has its shortcomings. But I have such a soft spot for it. I will always love that film. But in the theater, you will have fun. I believe you'll have fun. In the theater, I was the one film that I've been able to see was Alex Garland's Civil War. And I had kind of a muted response to it. There was a scene with Jesse Plemons that I thought was excellent and terrifying. The best scene in the film. Have you guys all seen it or?
Mm-mm.
I have seen it.
You haven't seen it. Okay. I won't give anything away. I'll just say that I found that the movie did not have much to say. And it felt that it just was kind of pleasing both the left and the right politically with shock value visuals. And I found it, for me personally, to be a surprisingly empty experience, save for an incredible harrowing scene with Jesse Plemons. That scene I wish had been expanded to be more of the movie. So I would have given that 2 stars. There, I know there's already, Nathan, you already reviewed the film on YouTube, on the Back to the Framerate YouTube channel. But it just did not, for me personally, it didn't resonate with me. So I won't go into it, take up time. But it was sort of what I thought it was going to be, but I was just expecting more from it. But I would give it.
It's not at all. I think we're in a lot of ways on the same page that the marketing for this film sold something completely different than what it was.
Yes.
What happened with movie marketing? Like, I think COVID has done some real damage with movie marketing. And
I don't disagree because they will do anything to get asses in seats.
At the expense of the film, I think. Oh, often. Yeah.
In fact, I'm going to actually go off on a movie that I'm going to talk about next about how the marketing destroyed it in a moment.
But I'll say really briefly, I love Alex Garland's other films, and this movie is technically competent. I just comparably, his Ex Machina and the incredible one with
Annihilation after that.
Annihilation. I love Annihilation. I thought that was an eerie, terrifying. So I think he's a very talented director. Yeah. Ex Machina is amazing. I thought this movie was skillful. It just felt like paint by numbers compared to what I've seen him do with other films. So that's me. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'll go next. So the other thing I will say, and I won't say anything more about Civil War. If you want to listen to my review of Civil War, we do have a YouTube channel that does have my video review of Civil War. So you can go to that for that. And I'll put the link in the show notes. I did go to the movies this past week and this past weekend, and I saw Abigail. Now, did you hear about this new genre? It's called Melissa Barrera Covered in Blood. And I am here for it.
Yes, yes. Right? I wanted to see Abigail.
She wears it like a boss.
Nice.
This is the new movie from directors Matt Bitinel, and Tyler Gillett, who over the last couple of years have been helming the Scream franchise. Mm-hmm. But the film that you can really connect the dots to, at least stylistically, is the 2019 film Ready or Not. Have you guys, either of you, seen that?
Yes.
I have not seen that.
Big fan.
I love that movie. I think it's a modern masterpiece of black comedy horror. I liked Abigail a lot, but I wasn't head over heels about it. And it's about these petty criminals that go in and they kidnap, well, they don't kidnap, but they're holding this girl for ransom. Now, what I don't want to do is, just on the off chance, and I don't think that's even possible, that there's somebody out there that has not seen any of the marketing for this. I don't want to spoil what this movie is really about, because I think this movie would be phenomenal if I did not know what happens in this.
See, I don't know what happens. I got to see it. Yeah.
Okay, so good.
Don't watch the trailer.
Don't watch the trailer, because this is a case where if you don't know anything about this movie, it's 10 times better if you know nothing about it. Because you think it's one thing. If you don't know what it is, you think it's one thing and it becomes something else. Because for the first 35 minutes of this film, I'm basically, looking at my watch, wondering, when is that thing going to happen? Mm-hmm. And that's what the movie kind of becomes. There are a couple other reveals and surprises in it, but for the most part, the movie is exactly what you think it's going to be. It's really well done, and it's got tons of blood and gore and all the things that you want it to be, but it's really paint by numbers.
This is what I'm talking about with movie marketing, though, where they're just giving everything away in the trailer. It's like, can we get people to the theater on a crumb of suspense?
This movie should have been sold as what you see in the first 35 minutes and then trust the audience to spread the word through viral marketing. I think this movie could have been a huge hit that way. It would have been like, you got to go see what this movie is, because it would have had that word of mouth appeal. I think this movie was a missed opportunity for that. I think,
Do you think we could have another Dusk Till Dawn moment, with the way we're marketing movies today? I don't know.
I don't know.
The marketing is so frustrating. They do tend with a lot of movies. It's like an insecurity in the marketing where they're like, this happens and this happens and this is it. And there's that's enough reason to see it, as if you can't, as if they're like,
there's no faith we in know audiences.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Probably, when they're making movies at this cost with so much risk, probably not. But I bet there was a discussion at one time, hey, listen, these two directors are not signed on to do the next Scream movie. So they may have gotten fed up with this whole thing. I don't know. Heck, Kevin Williamson is directing the next Scream movie. These guys are not doing it. So, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I thought that was weird. Because I assumed they were going back to the Scream 7, which is a mess.
I just hope that in general, in the theater, it's like a broad comment, but I'd love to see more like mid-tier films do well. Because it's like blockbuster or tiny movie, and the middle movies are like, I kind of miss them. Like,
Sam,
I have
been feeling this so deeply. We've been getting hints that like maybe the rom-com is coming back. Like, bring back just a fine movie.
And people tell me, like, not everyone, but people tell me, like, the future is entirely AI, entirely CG. And it depresses me so much, because I just hope that a renaissance returns with, like, actors and smaller stories and, like, on location.
I mean, maybe it is the future, but it can't be the future forever,
Yeah. I'm just worried about it, because I like the grit of seeing people in front of cameras doing things,
B, is there any other movie highlights?
Sorry, I ran through all of mine so fast, but the big one is, Australian New Wave, just trying to learn more about what that means and what Mad Max means in the context of that.
You mentioned you saw Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Can you? How was that?
Yes. You know, that's a fine movie. That is a fine, big budget Guy Ritchie movie. I hear Guy Ritchie makes a movie, I'll go to the theaters. You know, I mean, I'm excited for that. I don't think he's like breaking the mold. I think he's made a lot of better movies, but this is a good ensemble cast with, you know, a handful of roles that stand out that are delivering on the big action and the big plot. And it's a totally serviceable, well-made film. I don't know how memorable it is, but I think if we still had cable, this would be on and you would see this a lot, you know?
Okay.
Interesting.
Sam, anything else? You mentioned your Walks of World and Civil War. Anything else you want to mention?
That was it. Civil War was really the only thing I got the chance to see this week. Aside from Walks of World, my Walks of World handle is Walks of World 1981. That's where you can find those videos. But did not – no, I've just been on the road. But, yeah, Civil War was the great theater in Billings, Montana. Incredible, like, sound and stadium seating. But that was the only film I saw recently.
Nice.
Okay. I think that might be it. There might be one other thing. I did see – the last thing I'll mention, I did a little bit of catch-up. I from earlier this year, I saw The Beekeeper. I really don't have much to say about that. It was kind of dumb. and I saw Argyle.
I almost watched The Beekeeper. Argyle, that's another, how did you feel about Argyle? I saw it when it came out.
No, yeah. It's a mess. It is such a mess.
It is not good.
What would I say about Argyle?
Argyle seems to me like the example of a movie that's like made by like 10 different studio heads throwing in their opinion. Is that what it's kind of like?
The movie, every actor is in their own movie in this movie. It's a mess. Matthew Vaughn, someone needs to take the keys away from him. I don't know.
I thought it was kind of fun. This is one that I was able to just turn my brain off to and be like, yeah, okay, it's fine. But then I recently went back and watched Kingsman and some of that stuff. And it's like, oh, yeah, he has lost the plot a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it was a tough watch. I'm actually kind of looking at my letterbox for a moment here to see if there's anything else. I am slowly plugging away at my Robert Altman.
Oh, dude.
Marathon. I'm in the late 80s now. I watched one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. Probably the worst Robert Altman movie. I thought Quintet was bad, but no, I watched a movie called Beyond Therapy. I'm not going to talk about it, but the movie has not aged well, I guess I shall say.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. I hear that.
The plot is Manhattanites Bruce and Prudence are each looking for a meaningful romantic relationship and have been encouraged by their psychiatrist to find someone through the personal ads. Their first meeting is disastrous, but they begin to hit it off during their second date. However, Bruce's bisexual live-in lover does not want to share Bruce and is willing to do whatever it takes to keep him to himself. This stars Jeff Goldblum and Julie Haggerty. It is painful, and this movie is actually offensive. It's rough. It's really rough. So anyways, I'm not going to really talk about it, but I'm the dark 80s.
Yeah. you're going through it.
I'm going through it.
So, it sounds like the movie is beyond therapeutic help.
That's where I am at. I have not had it's been a kind of a slow month for movies. I have not watched a lot. But that is all. So
I'm watching enough for both of us, friend.
Thank you. Doing God's work. Okay. Well, I guess that's it. So I guess you can tell everyone to tune in for this upcoming Monday, where we'll be starting our Mad Max retrospective. Woo! Mad May.
Vroom, vroom.
We're in May from the Vroom Vroom Gang, right? I'm excited. And, all right, everyone.
When in doubt, smoke cigarettes because they're good for you.
Oh boy.
Just kidding. That was a lie.
All right. Everyone, have a good week. Good day. Good night. Oi.
Night.